So your book series is called New Ethnographies. To start the podcast, can you say a little bit about the sense in which they are new? Is it a case of new subject matter, new research topics, or both?
Well, the idea behind the series is actually to do both. So our priority with the book series is to publish original scholarship based on ethnographic research. And in that sense, it's new. But in addition to that, we have a particular interest in publishing work which explores what might be called the new ethnographic objects literature. So in the last 10 to 15 years in anthropology and sociology and a handful of other disciplines, there's been a growing interest in areas like activism or finance or even immigration, which I know now seen immigration itself feels like a relatively familiar ethnographic object, but 15 years ago it was quite a new ethnographic object. Transnationalism in my book, which is really about electioneering and party political activism, I should say. But a lot of these new ethnographic objects really speak to questions of knowledge. So in terms of the sociology of knowledge or the ethnography of knowledge, a lot of those sorts of objects are potentially of interest to the series. But we're also interested in publishing work which demonstrates ethnographic innovation. So work that is based on multi-sited fieldwork, for example, work that might engage in Michael Burroway's idea of public sociology, so collaborative ethnography, things like that would interest us greatly. And we've actually just published a book by Jeff Pearson on football hooliganism, which was based on 11 years of fieldwork, not 11 years full-time fieldwork, but 11 years of an ethnographic engagement with three different football clubs playing in the UK and Europe. So very much an ethnography based on a variety of sites. And that's a really good example of the kind of work we're interested in publishing, largely because it demonstrates innovation. But the one thing that all our books have in common, I think, is that they are based on a commitment to ethnography as a long-term enterprise. So we do have a bias, if you like, towards work which demonstrates a long-term commitment to the field.
And, you know, from an outsider's perspective, some of these new objects for ethnographic study, it seems quite surprising that they're new, because they seem like things that ethnographic methods would really help aid our understanding of.
They do seem surprising. I mean, I think what's quite interesting is I did my undergraduate degree in Australia in the early to mid-90s, and that was the period just after the end of the Cold War. And it's easy for us to take these sorts of things for granted now. But one of the things that really excited people at the time, particularly in anthropology, which was what my undergraduate degree was in, was the explosion of kind of NGO activism around human rights issues and human rights discourse. Now, you know, going hand in hand in that, a lot of the time was the emergence of what we now call sort of neoliberal, that nexus of neoliberal issues around economics and markets, etc. But of course, you know, with the collapse of the former Soviet Union, you know, NGOs and human rights was becoming an ideological commitment, if you like, in many countries where these things, you know, where civil society had not really existed in many decades, and human rights as an idea hadn't really existed either. So these ideas seem very sort of, I don't know, that they feel very familiar now. But in the 90s, there were new ethnographic objects, very exciting. And so in the last decade, we've also seen that move of ethnography into the study of finance and capitalism. Annalise Riles and Hiro Miyazaki have written extensively about some of the very elaborate financial instruments that have attracted their ethnographic gaze in the last few years in Japan and the United States. And even those sorts of issues now feel kind of familiar too. So what we hope the series will become is a vehicle for publishing ethnographic work that really challenges the frontiers of what we consider, or what scholars in general consider to be, sensible, legitimate objects for ethnographers to apprehend. I think one of the great strengths of ethnography is that, as a research method, it's something that lends itself to many different disciplines to tackle a wide variety of analytical objects, and its emphasis on participant observation as a dimension of research method, which then places a priority on thinking about the role of reflexivity in research, I think is also an incredibly liberating way to conduct research method, to conduct one's research. So, so I would argue that that ethnographic methods are a great and accessible form of doing social research to many people, from undergraduates to postgraduates to postdoctoral scholars and others. And we hope that the new ethnography series with Manchester University Press will in time become one of Britain's leading vehicles for showcasing the best of that research.
And what do you think the future holds more broadly for ethnography? I mean, is it something that is likely to thrive in the very challenging climate that will define higher education?
That's the million-dollar question, if you like. I mean, I personally remain optimistic about the future of ethnography, because ethnography as a research method, as a way of doing social research, is very accessible. I don't mean to dwell on it, but in a way it's one of the cheapest research methods, because it relies largely on the individual scholar, and or if there's a group of scholars engaged in collaborative ethnography, their skills and their kind of wit, if you like, their initiative, their ability to build trust and rapport with people, etc., etc., etc. And you don't need a lot of money to enable that kind of research. So even in challenging economic times, I think ethnography has a bright future. Where the question that you raise is a little more problematic, in my view, is in terms of the future of ethnographic publishing, because a lot of major publishers around the world have withdrawn from publishing single or co-authored ethnographic monographs, which is what we're publishing in the series. But Manchester University Press has a long history of being committed to anthropological and ethnographic publishing, and so their commitment to this series, I think, is an indication of a renewed commitment to ethnographic publishing, which has me optimistic about the future of ethnographic monographs in this country as well.
Thanks very much for your time.